Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and pleased to welcome back a couple of experts for you. Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha is the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. Kristen, good to see you again.
Glad to be here.
And Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator and Director of Education at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, our other guest. Welcome back, Mike.
Hey, good to see you.
Lots of things we can talk about. Every one of our lines is already filled. But before we get started, you've got some things going on at the Rotary Garden. Is there a garden festival or something coming up?
Coming up on September 12th from 11 to 4, we'll be hosting our fourth annual garden festival. For anybody who's been there before, we have taste testing of all the different varieties of heirloom tomatoes we've been growing over the year. This year we did a pole bean collection, so we'll have samples of those out for people to try. Peppers. We had a Ristra project going on last year that everybody was able to take peppers home from that. Fried green tomatoes, canning and recipes, stuff for the kids provided by our local 4-H, educational programs put on by Master Gardeners, as well as just free access to Rotary Gardens that day.
And, you know, you mentioned the recipes and canning and that, and one of the things that has come up on the show with the disease problems we've had with tomatoes this year, our nutritionists are telling us that the acid content is pretty low on, on tomatoes. So I'm sure that's one thing you'll be talking about is putting some extra acid in when you do that canning.
We'll have our home community educators of Rock County will be providing that information. And, yeah, they'll be prepared for all that.
And when is it again?
September 12th.
And it's at the Rotary Gardens.
At Rotary Gardens, yeah. Just as long as you get down there, you'll see the signs. You shouldn't be able to miss it.
Okay. And for more information, just what's your website?
RotaryGardens.org.
RotaryGardens.org.
Oh, yeah. And I'd be remiss to not mention our plant sales going on then, too.
Okay. So the plant sales going on, too. Well, Kristen, here's one for you. We've got an email from Mona in New Berlin, who's wondering what's the best way to store leeks for the winter?
I would leave them in the ground. Mulch them over and leave them in the ground. They'll keep best there. And then if you don't use them all, you can start them growing really easily in the spring. And if that's not really an option or you don't want to do that, you can bring it in and keep it in kind of a cool, somewhat humid spot. And those should store really well. I have leek all the way through the winter.
Yeah, that's the easy way. Just leave them in the ground. I like that approach. Dick in Springfield, we'll go to you now. Hi, Dick.
Hi there. In the midst of a bunch of prairie grass, I have a rose that I think is natural. It's probably about 20 years old. I didn't put it there. That is probably 6 or 7 feet around in circumference of the ground where the canes come out.
6 or 7 feet, did you say?
Yeah, circumference around the bottoms of the canes. It's about 7 feet high now, spreads out about 8 or 9 feet in terms of, you know, canes standing over. I've never done anything to maintain it. I've never fertilized it, watered it, cut back dead stuff or anything. But this is the first year in the 10 years I've been observing it that it looks pretty sick this time of year. And I was wondering what your folks might suggest.
Well, are the flowers on it very ornate, or are they very simple?
Small, large?
They're small. I think it would be called a floribunda if it was a cultivar. They're small. They're pink. And there are tons of them, except there aren't now.
A little earlier in the summer, bloomer?
Pretty dry.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
It blooms a little earlier in the summer.
Yeah, right. Very spring, early summer.
We're thinking it's probably something called multiflora rose. They're real common in farm fields and roadsides and things like that. They're actually an invasive plant species. So you might want to take that to your local extension and get it ID'd. And it is, if it is multiflora rose, you would want to actually kill it.
I really would. I do have other, you know, little rose bushes popping up around in what used to be a farm field that we now use for horse pasture.
Yeah, I'm thinking that is multiflora rose, at least from the way you're describing it. And that's going to be really hard to control. You're going to want to have it cut and pulled out. You're probably going to have to use some chemical treatment. If it's in a prairie, burn it.
I was trying to keep it alive and going since it's so nice to look at in the spring.
Get it properly identified. If it comes up being multiflora rose, you're going to need to have it removed because it will take over your prairie and it will be a bad thing then.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, they look pretty, but boy, they take over. They mm-hmm. can take mm-hmm. over. And then you've got a real mess mm-hmm. getting rid of them. Maddie in Waupaca, your turn. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I'd like to ask, what causes our plums to crack before they get ripe? They crack on the top from the stem area, and just when they are turning red. We're not sure if the tree, we've forgotten whether it's a pipestone plum or a superior plum. And do you have any idea what is causing them to crack?
Isn't water an issue sometimes?
Does that happen every year or just some years?
Some years.
Yeah, it might be just when the fruit's enlarging. If we get a really good downpour or a lot of rain, too much water goes into that fruit too fast and it cracks the skin. Okay. It happens with tomatoes too.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Not much to be done about that.
No, not at all.
Bill in Heartland, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm highly allergic to bees and would like to plant flowers. Are there any kinds of flowers that don't attract bees that I could plant?
Well, I'm sure there probably are, but for something to come up with a recommendation right here on the spot, probably I'm not going to be able to come up with anything. What you have to do is look at your landscape and realize there's other things you can put in your garden that are ornamental other than just flowers. You have bark, you have stems, you have leaves that you can all put out there that can have an ornamental flower bed and not have the flowers to deal with. I'm thinking, Kristen, I'm stretching back to entomology. Bees go after a lot of blue flowers, correct?
Yes.
For that UV?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe you want to avoid the color blue.
I mean, most of your flowers are going to have nectar. Well, they're all going to have nectar, so they're all going to have some problems. I would either plant them quite a ways away from your house and have an area you can maybe view through a window that you're not going to be mm-hmm. nearby a lot. Most bees really aren't aggressive, especially honeybees and things like that really won't bother people. So it might be a good idea if you want to look at flowers to put them at a distance from your house and then be able to view them from your deck or window. But if not, I would go with some of the things Mike suggested, like, you know, some of the deciduous trees that have really mm-hmm. nice red foliage, you know, different color changing foliage or variegated plants or good texture, because you can get some really nice gardens just working with that.
And the quality of the artificial stuff has greatly improved. So you can go to your local hobby store and probably get some nice silk or plastic things if you need something up close.
And I tell you what, there are some nice bushes. I'm trying to think of some of the berry bushes. Saskatoon service berries mm-hmm. are a nice bush, and they have some nice pretty red
To answer that question better, we would need to know his size of his landscape, how much light he would have, how much soil he would have, you know, what type of soil mm-hmm. he would have, so we can start recommending plants specific to those locations.
Yeah, so probably a soil test would be one good way to start out.
If he can go to his county extension office and have a conversation with a master gardener. He could probably get a lot of his answers that way.
Mm-hmm. Good luck to you, Bill. Thank you for calling. Jolene in Ashland, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Jolene.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about my oriental lilies. They all came up white this year. They were colored last year. They're all white this year. My yarrows all turned white this year. And I'm wondering why that is.
Well, nutrients.
The blooms turned white? Or the leaves?
The blooms are white.
And what color were the Asian lilies last year?
Pinks and, different colored pinks.
Okay.
Now, all the lilies I planted this spring all came up colored. But the ones that have been in there for years past are all white.
I've had this question before, and the answer I can only come up with is you're having them set seed. And you're having their offspring coming up. And when you have your plants, which are often hybrids or have some breeding put into them, when you have them reproduce on their own in the yard, you're going to have a crapshoot as to what's going to come up for the quality of those plants.
Cut all the seed pods off, so I don't think it's that.
Well, then if you don't think that's that, I don't have an answer.
There's some problems with other plants reverting. Like if you have two different flowers that you bred together, one of them has stronger genetics and it'll overtake the genetics of the other one. So it could revert to whatever the stronger original parent was in the hybrid.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, in the last guy that called, there are so many corbels now that have beautiful colored foliage, and he could just cut the flowers off. They don't bloom very long, but there's so many neat foliage plants now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could easily do a garden with just foliage.
Yeah, even absolutely. Coleus and things like that would be
mm-hmm.
great.
Yeah. Good points. Thanks, Jolene.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let's see. Adam and Waupun up next. Hi, Adam.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, I have two questions. And one is, can I make fish meal? And what would I need in order to do that? I kind of think maybe I could get my hands on copious amounts of fish guts, bones, and skin at various cleaning stations where I'm from up in northern Wisconsin. And then also, what would I need to do in order to pull off a lime or lemon tree up in the southern part of the UP, northern Wisconsin area? If I guess what I'm imagining is a high tunnel, and it being in the high tunnel consistently throughout the year, and then in the winter maybe wrapping it in something like row cover or something. So those are my questions.
And let's start with the fish meal. What are you using fish meal for?
I guess just initial fertilization, maybe for my transplants and stuff.
Fish meal doesn't, if you go to the research, fish meal doesn't actually supply many nutrients at all to plants. And I worry that you're going to be putting a whole lot of work into something that's not going to give you a whole lot of payback.
Okay.
Lemon or lime tree?
Why do you want to do that?
I'm making a really neat salsa out of almost entirely farm-grown, what we're growing here at the farm in Waupun, almost entirely farm-grown ingredients with the exception of lime. It's the only ingredient I'm not. And then furthermore, if I can give a shout-out to Blue Bike Burrito in Marinette, Wisconsin, he buys a lot of produce right now from local farms in that area. And in the event that I pull off a substantial farm up in that part of the state, he's willing to buy quite a bit of vegetables from me. And so if I could do limes, we could do an entirely locally produced pico that would just be out of this world.
I support the whole locally grown initiative, but I think what it would take to keep that high tunnel or hoop house heated for fossil fuels would just totally be counterproductive to your goal.
Oh, you would have to heat it then. I'm imagining not.
They don't go dormant.
Okay. All right.
There's no dormancy involved with limes. The only one, I know there's somebody in Walworth County that grows tropical plants, but they use a conservatory to do it, so a glass house.
Oh, I see.
That's
okay.
Heated year-round, and that's really the only way to get a volume of them.
Okay.
If you want to just grow some for your own use, you can get a lime plant for your house.
Mm-hmm.
And bring it, and you leave it in the house, and you can put it outside all summer and bring it in. And you're not going to get a ton of limes off of it, but you'll get a few limes off of it, and you might really enjoy, the times when you can use your own limes. The only thing I warn you about with those is they can get scale really easily outside, and you've got to be careful, because if you want to eat the limes, you've got to be careful how you treat the scale. You don't want to use any kind of systemic insecticides in those.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And Jody and Ripon, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a pear tree. A friend of mine graciously lets me pick the pears off her pear tree so that I can can them. And this year, when I went to pick them, there were very few. There weren't very many at all. I know that they don't spray the tree, but it had this appearance on the leaves that looked spotty, and then one branch was actually like a blackish brown the leaves had gotten, and the branch actually looked kind of blackish brown. Is that some kind of, and then, so since then I have bought my own pear tree, and I'm worried that even though they're not close to each other, several blocks away, I'm wondering, is that some kind of a fungus or something that I would have to worry about also with my tree?
Well, pear trees do get pear scab, which is similar to apple scab. So you can end up with pear scab, which will end up with spots on the leaves, and then you'll end up with spots in the fruits. If you're canning them and you're peeling them and then canning them, then that's not a problem for you, so I really wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, but will it kill the tree eventually?
No, pear scab, it's kind of an annoying cold. You know what I mean? It takes a little bit out of the tree. It's not quite as optimally healthy, but it doesn't really harm the long-term health of the tree, unless it's very, very severe every year.
Oh, great to know. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. On this edition of Garden Talk, Mike Maddox and Kristen Krokowski, our guests. Kristen from Waukesha. She's the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. Mike is a UW Extension Hort Educator in Rock County and Director of the of Education at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin. And answering the phones and producing the show, Jim Packard. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a gardening question, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Connie May emailed us. She says, I pulled my tomatilla plants the other night because they were infested with earwigs. I tried looking online and in some gardening books, but I couldn't find anything that referred to tomatillas. They're burrowing, the earwigs, I assume, are burrowing inside the husks and laying eggs on the fruit. Yuck. Any suggestions on this problem so I don't run into it again next year?
Well, just view it as extra protein content for your tomatillas.
I'd be surprised if earwigs were burrowing into your tomatoes and laying eggs. I think you might have another culprit, and the reason you have so many earwigs, I'm guessing you have a lot of mulch or a lot of organic matter in your soil because that's what's going to attract the earwigs. You're going to have a cool, dark, nutrient-rich area, and that'll bring earwigs in. But I've never encountered earwigs on tomato, and I really don't think that they ever have anything to do with tomato fruit. So you might be looking for something else. So you might want to take a look if you have any tomatoes still out there and keep an eye on them and see what you might have. It might be a tomato earworm or tomato hornworm.
Mm-hmm.
But there aren't a whole lot of things that are going to burrow into fruit. The other thing that causes holes on fruits a lot are birds. Birds will go in and peck at your fruit.
Mariette in Cedarburg, we're on to you now. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. We were at the Rotary, our garden club was at the Rotary Gardens in summer, in late, early summer, and you had a Mystic Spirit, beautiful dahlia there that I have not been able to find locally at all, and I was wondering where you obtained that.
Well, I'm not the individual who does the shopping for those. We have Mark Dwyer, director of horticulture, gets all the same garden catalogs that we can get as homeowners. And the way I always view it is by the time we blow our budget by page 20, he actually makes it back to page 25 and looks a little deeper into the catalog and orders some of the things there. If you want to know where we specifically get a plant, I suggest giving us a call or sending us an email so we can look that up.
Okay. I will do that. I had checked online, and the only thing I found was New Zealand for that particular.
Yeah. If you want to send me an email or give me a phone call, I'll look it up for you and give you an answer.
Okay, so whose attention does that go to?
Mike. I'll follow through on it.
Okay, Mike. I will give you an email on that, and your email address is just rotary.org, rotarygarden.org.
No. If you've got access to the computer and get to Larry's show, my email's listed on that.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Charlene in Franksville. Let's see. Oh, we're not going to do it that way. Here we go. Charlene, hello.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Well, I have a slight problem. I listen to the Wisconsin Public Radio. In fact, it's my only station. And I was doing the dishes, and I've been canning tomatoes. And I heard Mike say that they're low acid this year. I have a problem. I've got 61 quarts put up already.
Whoa.
Of stewed tomatoes.
Okay, what did the tomatoes look like when you put them away or put them up? I mean, are these your tomatoes? I guess we'll start there.
Oh, yes.
How do your tomatoes look this year?
Terrific.
Healthy? You don't have any spots on the leaves or anything else?
On the leaves?
Yep.
Well, my leaves have been dying.
Okay.
Now. But I mean, earlier, I mean, it was a pretty healthy, I mean, some leaves. You'd expect some of the plants to be dying by this time, I would think.
They should be doing okay as long as she's been taking care of them. Well, could you describe a little bit more about what's on the leaves and what...
They're brown.
So
there was no bugs on them because I watch, that. And there was no bugs that I could see on anything until now.
Yeah, the concern was if you had the late blight fungus, it was going to alter the chemistry for your canning. I think what may be best done at this point is you might want to take a can to your county office, for a county extension office and have a conversation with the family living educator. They have some better resources for food preservation than what we do. Maybe there's a test they can do to test your pH.
And the concern really with the late blight is bacterial contamination. What can happen if your fruit were clean when you did it?
Oh, yes. I'm ultra clean. I wash my jars before I put them away. I wash them before I use them. I wash all my vegetables that I put in there. I mean.
And you're using a hot canning method?
Yeah. What I do is I pack them in the jar, put them in the, put the lids on, put them in a hot bath, and boil them for 25 to 30 minutes.
You know, honestly, I think your risk is low, but I'm not the be-all, end-all expert on food safety.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But my understanding is, along with the acid, the only other concern that they're worried about with the late blight is that when the fruit have an infection on them and it breaks the skin, there can be a related bacterial infection of the
inside.
Fruit. Yes, and that's what they're concerned about, that not only is that particular fruit going to have bacteria, but by cutting it off, you're going to spread that bacteria around to your other tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
And we don't want people getting botulism or any kind of bacterial poisoning from their own canned vegetables.
Right.
And that's what we're concerned about. So I'd go with Mike and say that you probably just need to check the pH of one of the cans. And if it seems to be in a good range, then I would go with it. But I'm sure that the university doesn't like me saying something like that on the air.
Well, that's why we're deferring to our family living colleagues.
You really should have the acid content checked.
Yes.
Okay, now I guess my next question is this. Because I've picked the tomatoes at different time in their different batches, would that make a difference?
It depends on what the health of your plants are and if they've been deteriorating over time.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, if you pick some stuff early in the season, your plant's leaves were green and the fruit were healthy, you didn't see any disease on it, then I'd be a lot less concerned about those than I would from picking fruit from a brown plant.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Greg in Green Bay, we turn to you now. Greg, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. My wife and I have started a small business selling salsa in Green Bay, and we're using the Algoma Food Market kitchen to prepare it, and everything's with licensing and inspected and everything. So our dilemma right now is, you know, I've said we need to price this kind of on a worst-case scenario, and that if we have to buy tomatoes, peppers, and all that such, and let's say we got wildly successful, well, you have to find a place to buy everything in the winter. And what we're struggling with is to find anybody that will that we can find the four types of peppers we use. We use the serranos, jalapenos, chili peppers, and banana peppers. And we're having a hard time finding somebody that, you know, we can get all these peppers year-round potentially. And then second part of it is we know we can get Roma tomatoes anytime, but the beefsteaks that we use are a bit of an issue as well. And we've called a couple of the food suppliers locally, and they don't seem to have the peppers we're looking for. The tomatoes, I don't think, would be the biggest issue. But just any help? I know farmers markets are, you know, available at this time of year, but year round, it's
right. Kristen, any comments?
I know there's a fair number of people doing hydroponic tomatoes and peppers up in your area. You might want to see if they'll grow the stuff for you on contract.
Okay.
Usually what you do then is you just go to the people and say, hey, I'm looking for these kind of peppers. I'm willing to agree to buy this kind of volume, and you kind of share in the risk of it.
Uh-huh.
And where would he go? Where would Greg go to kind of find maybe those folks who are doing it hydroponically in his area?
Most of the people who do hydroponic tomatoes and peppers are selling at the farmers markets early before the local vegetables come in.
Uh-huh.
So you might want to check. I'm not sure if they're listed in your local Farm Fresh Atlas. That's a kind of a newspaper guide to all the locally grown produce in your area, and a lot of the hydroponic people are listed in there. And there's one for each different region of the state. So you just want to go to farmfreshatlas.org.
And peppers as well?
I don't know. I know there are some people doing peppers. I'm not sure exactly who you're going to talk to in your area, but
yeah.
If they're set up for tomatoes with hydroponics, it's not a hugely different thing to do peppers. So that might just be able something you can talk to them about.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call as well. Nick in Waukesha emailed and says, where I work, there's an apple tree that's essentially growing wild, but the apples are excellent. Like to try planting the seeds from this tree, but would like to determine what kind of tree it is first.
That doesn't work.
Yeah, don't do that.
And just like the brief explanation of why that doesn't work, it's just like kids. You have a mom and a dad, and the kid looks nothing like either one of you. Same thing with apples. The apple was pollinated by the flower was pollinated from some other pollen, so you've got a lot of genetic material in there, and whatever the offspring's going to be, chances are it's not going to be anything like the parent. So what you would need to do is graft that tree. Mm-hmm. Cut off a green branch, something that's grown this year, and then graft it onto a rootstock. And if you want to get more into that, I suggest you go online. There's a lot of information about grafting and rootstocks, but yeah, it's kind of a complicated process, but you can definitely give it a shot.
All right. There you have it. Let's go to Marlis in Cambridge. Hi, Marlis.
Hello. I have two questions, and they're both about tomatoes and the tomato blight. We're pretty sure our tomatoes have it. They looked beautiful, and then literally overnight they just went brown and curled up. So how do we safely discard these plants so that we don't contaminate, you know, anything else? And number two, is that ground safe to use for tomatoes next year?
Okay. First one, how to discard of them. How many plants do you have?
Oh, only about 5 or 6.
Oh, just cut them off at the ground, throw them in a garbage bag.
Okay, and then just put them out with regular garbage?
Yep, absolutely. That's the best way to deal with it, because then all the little spores and all your leaves and everything stay in the bag and you don't have to worry about them. And then that ground will be safe next year.
Okay.
The nice thing about tomato late blight as opposed to potato late blight is that on tomatoes and tomato plants, the actual fungus doesn't overwinter very well because the tomato plants decompose over the winter. The only thing they're worried about is that this disease will jump to potatoes, and then you'll have actual potato tubers, and that's where they overwinter really well. So don't be concerned. Hopefully we won't have this problem at all next year.
And the fruit is safe to eat. Fresh.
It's not quite that simple.
Okay.
If you pull a fruit off of your plant and there's no lesion on it, then yes, it's completely safe to eat.
Okay.
If you pull them off and there are brown lesions, then you know, or the white spores, then I would probably just discard it.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
And for next year too, for everyone, remember to rotate your tomatoes. Practice all that good, sound culture for managing your tomatoes. Rotate them. Use mulches, proper watering. Mm-hmm. That'll all help you in the long run next year.
Mm-hmm.
Angie in Sister Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Angie.
Hi. I have a similar problem to the previous caller, but what I'm wondering is it okay to go in and try to get rid of the branches that have this blight on them, or am I going to infect my plant with more spores?
Once you start seeing the symptoms, it can kill the entire plant within 2 days. It's already in your whole plant, so just chopping off parts of it isn't really going to help the situation.
Okay. Also, what's the best way to get, like, more, reconstitute the soil? Like, what should I do? Because I went to my local nursery, and they told me to put cocoa mulch in my soil, and I did that, and that's when I started getting mold.
I'm not a fan of cocoa bean mulch at all. It's pretty. It
smells nice.
But then it all gets slimy and rotty, and I'm not a fan of that. What you should do to always take care of your soil is add compost on a regular basis. I try to put about 2 inches of some sort of compost on my vegetable garden each year. I could top dress it and work it in. And that's all I do. And you can make your own compost, or you can go to the store and buy bags of compost, or you can call your local landscaper and see if they can drop off yards of compost.
Just make sure it's aged compost. If it's fresh compost, then you need to make sure you put that on in the fall and work it in so it mellows during the winter. If you put fresh compost on your garden in the spring, you'll burn all your plants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about straw? Like, if I work it in now?
I use straw as a mulch to help with weed suppression and to help with moisture retention through the growing season. I'll probably eventually till it in as an organic matter, but I'm not going to expect a lot out of it. I'm going to have to come in with some nutrients.
There's nothing in there.
No,
nothing.
It's what's left over after the plant gives up all of its nutrients to the grain.
Right.
So it's okay for a little bit for soil structure, but nutrient-wise, you're really not going to get anything out of it.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Kathy in Greenleaf, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. My question is in regards to using a systemic insecticide for controlling sawfly larvae on serviceberry every year. It seems to get worse. But I don't like the idea. I'm wondering, does that transfer over to the fruit? And if it does, I don't want to affect the birds. So how safe is it to use for something that, you know, wildlife would use as edible?
I wouldn't recommend it.
No, it all gets carried through the food chain.
Okay, so not to use that. And then I have a question in regards to swamp white oak.
Okay.
With spider mites. Every year, my tree gets infected with spider mites. And I've used insecticidal soap. I hose it off on a weekly basis, but right now the leaves are actually bronze. And this is a cycle that's happened. This is the fourth year now. And
who diagnosed it as spider mites?
Oh, I brought them to my extension office, and it was we saw them underneath the microscope.
Okay. I'm just wondering if maybe there were spider mites on it at that time, but it's also operating in conjunction with another problem. How big of a tree is it?
It was planted as a bald and burlap about 5 years ago.
Oh.
Puts on about 12 to 15 inches yearly. So it's, you know, probably 22, 24 feet tall. Okay.
You know, I've got a swamp white oak in my front yard, and one of the reasons I did it was because it was pretty, you know, as it goes, pretty much a pest-free tree. You know, it's got some of the big ones out there, but I make sure it's mulched. I make sure it's watered.
Yep, I have it mulched,
and
watered.
It takes care of itself. Then.
Is there something else going on? Are there any other insecticides being applied in your yard?
No, I don't. See, I don't use insecticides, really, and that's why I asked the question with serviceberry is to try to get rid of the sawflies. But
So the oak is looking, what is the oak looking like?
Bronze.
The leaves are actually bronzed. You know, the new leaves that came out about a month ago, those are green. But they are actually beginning to bronze where in the creases.
Well, if you're seeing spider mites every year, and you know, it's been diagnosed as spider mites, the best thing you can do is hose down that tree on a regular basis. Spider bites have to climb all the way back up the tree, and with most of the infections or most of the infestation of spider mites, it happens during dry periods of the year, so the rain naturally keeps their populations down. So I go out there once a week and hose it down.
One other thing that you said that tree was planted 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 years, if the tree was not planted properly, you could be getting some strangulation on the roots.
If you're noticing some discoloration.
I have a nice root flare.
All right.
It was taken out of the burlap. The cage was cut off. So,
those are things I like to hear.
I know it's the spider mites, but I just can't get them under control.
Hose it down? Honest to God, hosing it down will work. And if you still see problems, if you're going out there, and only during dry periods, if it's raining a lot, then I wouldn't worry about it. But if we start going through a dry stretch, start hosing it down once a week, if it persists, then have an arborist come out and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alrighty.
Right. Thanks. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, sounds like she planted it right. You know, 5 years, that's about the time, three to five years, that trees start getting root strangled if they weren't properly planted.
Well, if it was properly planted and it's been in 3 to 5 years and it has, it's about the time it should be overcoming any transplant shock, too.
Yeah.
So if all is done correctly and she's been managing, it should really be putting on some growth and it should outgrow most of the problems it's having. This is one of those things where she could follow up with us directly on the phone call and with some pictures.
And sometimes, like, if your neighbor's doing an insecticide treatment to the lawn every week, that causes huge mite problems. And if she lives next door to somebody who does that, some of these things, you really have to be almost on site or have, like, a complete picture to figure out exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Kathy. They're beautiful trees. We have a swamp white oak on campus here that...
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you and I are pretty big guys, and I don't think we could get our lock arms and get around that tree. It's a beautiful, beautiful tree. Beautiful tree.
I think I know the one you're talking about.
Jim in Green Bay, we're on to you. Hi, Jim.
Oh, boy, do I need you guys. I noticed I have a large compost pile, and some plants started growing out of it, and I said, oh, good. Then I put some squash seeds in the compost pile. I said, well, they'll grow together. Now I've got all these vines. I mean, they're huge all over the place. They're crawling up the fence. And I'm getting these yellow, oh, God, how do I explain this thing? It's kind of a decorative-looking squash. If it, I don't know if it's a gourd or a squash. It's yellow.
Did you buy the seeds, or are they being salvaged from a plant last year?
Salvaged from a plant last year.
Good luck guessing what that is. Boy, we were talking about the promiscuity of apples earlier. Squash are worse. They have a lot of genetic gene mix-up that can happen in their offspring, and you can get some things that are looking like they're coming from out of space. So,
is that considered, is it edible?
It could be, but it could taste horrible. Yeah. You won't know till you try it.
Okay. It probably won't kill you.
No.
Oh, as long as it won't kill me, I'll try it. Hey, thanks a lot.
Sure. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to, where are we going next? Elizabeth, I think, is up next in Washburn. Hi, Elizabeth.
Well, I'm back to the tomatoes again.
Okay.
All right. I have always put in as a county bulletin, well, a state bulletin calls the 2 tablespoons of lemon juice or vinegar to my tomatoes,
yes.
Canned tomatoes.
Yes.
Would this take care of a problem with eating them?
Yes, it will.
Yes, it will. That's a typical recipe for canning is to add.
I mean, I've been doing that ever since the bulletin came out, like, 10, 12 years ago.
That's great. Thank you for following Extension recommendations. And we appreciate it.
Well, it's what I've always done.
Yeah. And it works.
And it does work. Yeah, it does work. But I do know that there are some concerns about adding even a little bit more this year of that lemon juice,
mm-hmm.
to increase, just to kind of make up for the potential for having the acid being too low.
To be on the safe
so
side.
So even though you've got an Extension publication from 10 years ago, the new recommendation might be slightly different. They might have added a little bit more.
Well, I mean, one more tablespoon isn't going to change that quart of tomatoes any.
No, it sure isn't.
So, I mean, I could add 3, and I'm home free.
You may well be. You might just call. Shoot, you know.
I've got to call in to the county extension right now.
Yeah. Okay, good.
But
they will have.
I had to leave messages all around the block, so I'll wait and see what
there
they
is,
have to say.
There is a publication on the Learning Store website, the University of Wisconsin Learning Store. And what you're looking for is a publication called Tomatoes Tart and Tasty, and that's number B2605, and that's what they're recommending.
Well, that's the one I think I picked up the last one maybe about 5 years ago.
Well, I think you might be set. That's what's the press release from Barb Ingham, who's
Yes,
and she's the food safety person at the university, and that's what her press release says, is to follow those instructions.
Ah, perfect.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And Barb Ingham was the person who brought this up originally. So that's a good thing. So tomatoes tart and tasty. And I remember that from a previous show now after someone has said it. John in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, John.
Good afternoon. Hey, I just have a quick question. I appreciate your show. I've got a large oak tree that hangs over our patio, and evidently ants are working on it up mm-hmm. above because there's droppings that fall on the patio. If it was on grass, I would never know it. And I got a dog. Is there something I can do that can safely stop the ant infestation in the oak tree?
What I want you to do is switch your focus from the ants being a problem to the ants being something helpful for you. Those ants are probably living in some decay going on in your tree. They're not causing it. They're letting you know it's there. So if you have a large oak tree that is over your patio and it has decay in it, you want a certified arborist to come out and do an inspection of that tree to make sure there is nothing. There's not a branch that might fall on your house or someone sitting on your patio. So I wouldn't be concerned about the ants at this point. I'd be concerned about a decay pocket up above.
Okay.
The ants are telling you something.
Yes.
All right. There you go. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. talking with Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, on this edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Lots of callers online, so we will take a call right now from Bob in Wauwatosa. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to raise the age-old issue once again, if it hasn't already been raised this morning, about what to do with the burlap wrap on a root ball of a shrub or small tree. And what's generating my interest in this question today is that we have a rather pricey quotation from a nursery to redo our entire front yard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into a, shall we say, discussion with the nursery people when they're putting in expensive bushes and shrubs and the like. But at the same time, we've had some problems with planting and transplanting in the past. And I don't know whether the burlap bag was the problem or not. So what's the current thinking on this? Do you just slit the burlap from top to bottom and, of course, take the rope off of the top? Or do you leave it on or what? My preconceived notion is that it makes sense to slit it after you've put the plant in the hole, slit the burlap, and then slitting it facilitates removing it.
Yeah. Well, let me jump in on this one. I've been teaching tree planting to master gardeners for 8 years now, and have sat in on a number of programs talking about tree planting specifications. And through research that's being done across the nation, they've been really taking a look at how do we plant trees and how does planting a tree affect its long-term viability. And there are those of us out there who are really trying to retrain individuals on how proper tree planting is done these days, because it is not the way that we've been recommending it in our UW Extension publications or any Extension publication. It is recommended to remove the burlap completely, and if you're unable to remove it completely, to at least get it to lay down at the bottom of the planting hole. It is recommended to remove the wire basket completely, and again, if unable to remove it, get it to cut to lay down at the bottom of the hole. You want to dig that planting hole so it's only as deep enough to put the root flare of that tree at the natural soil grade. The root flare may not necessarily be at the top of the planting ball, but it may be somewhere buried in there. So it may require some sort of excavation of the top of that root ball in order to expose that root flare.
Is the root flare basically where the roots kind of blend into the trunk?
The root flare was going to be that bell-shaped area where it goes from root tissue to trunk tissue. And most of the time, it's bell-shaped. So if you go for a walk in the woods and you see that nice flare that's formed on those trees planted by squirrels, that's the root flare. What you have to do is look for that on your tree you're planting. If it's a grafted tree, don't confuse the bud graft union with the root flare. The root flare is typically below it by 6 inches, 8 inches, depends on the process they're making the trees. That is the part you need to put at the natural soil grade. I think if you're looking for information on this more, our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has a publication on it. If you could just Google new tree planting, Wisconsin DNR, there's a threefold brochure you can get. You can probably stop by your county DNR office or extension office and get this brochure as well. It lists step by step on how to plant. Some of the issues associated with deep planting, I found a website through the University of Minnesota that has a lot of information on explaining why the old methods of planting have causing problems now. There's just a lot of research going out there supporting this. It's still an education process. I remember the first time I went out into the field and told someone who was been doing this for 50 years, you know, I was 25 and, I got called a whippersnapper. But it's taken some time to re-educate everyone, and it makes a difference in the tree's health.
And it might be a really good idea to get that pamphlet and take it to whatever nursery you're working with and say, this is how I'd like my trees planted. I need this in the contract.
Yeah, you really should do that. Mm-hmm. And you're not looking at a hole like a post hole. You're looking at a hole that looks like a saucer.
Like a bowl. Yeah. You know, and it can also go beyond that. You need to match your tree to the soil that's to your site. If you're in heavy clay, you need a tree that can grow in heavy clay. If you are in a nice sandy soil, you need something that's going to be able to take the drainage and the dry spots.
How do you find out which plants can handle clay? Because we're on the western edge of Wauwatosa, and the soil is very clay-like.
You can just call. Both Milwaukee County and Waukesha County have horticulture helplines, and those are usually listed in the Sunday paper. Or you can find them online if you go to Milwaukee County UW Extension, and you can call, and they can give you a pretty exhaustive list of what trees grow best in clay.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Tree planting is also at the Dane County Tree Board website, treeboard.org. Just go to treeboard.org, and the planting recommendations and pictures and all that are on that as well. So there you have it, Bob, and hopefully that helps. I see so many trees. I just cringe when I look at some of the trees that I drive by, and they look like they've been planted too deep, and you know that in about 4 years, 3, 4, 5 years, they're going to be dead.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, especially when you go to the nursery and you see that trees are, you know, $200, $300, $400, $500. I can't imagine investing that in 10 years into a tree only for it to die.
And that's one reason why bare root, I think, has become so popular. And it actually is a very good way to plant trees. And we're going to be talking next week. Bruce Allison, who is a professional consulting arborist with a doctorate in horticulture and trees, was going to be my guest. And last time he was on, he said talking about bare root and
I like bare root trees. Unfortunately, not everything can come bare root trees.
Right.
Sometimes we want these really unique things for our yard, and those root systems just can't tolerate being bare rooted. So you need to get something from the nursery. And by no means am I faulting nursery production with changing the soil grade, because they have to produce trees, and already they're $300. If we ask them to change their production methods, it's going to drive the price up more. I think if we can make the correction at the time it goes in the ground,
that's the time. That's the time. Mike in Seneca, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Thanks, Larry. I got a question for your guest here, kind of pertinent and timely and everything else. I missed when I was planting this spring, I had some calla lily bulbs, and they got overlooked, and they're really nice big ones, and they've got about at least a 2-inch shoot on them. And I was just wondering if I plant them now in order for them to make their food for the winter. There isn't much growing time left. I'm wondering if I should, number one, plant them and see what happens. Number two, plant them and then take them in, which I have a light problem. Or what should I do?
Well, okay, so you got them in the ground late. And so
they're not in the ground yet.
In the ground late, but these ones I found were just in in dry air.
All right, yeah, you can't stop the process and say, no, wait, I want you to grow next year. You're going to have to let it grow. And you're going to have to put it into a pot. It's not going to have enough season this year to grow outdoors. So you're going to have to find a way to put them indoors, put a heavy light on them, nurse them through to the next year, and then let them go dormant. But honestly, by the time you go through all that and you invest the energy and the soil into the pot, just buy new ones next year.
But if you want to.
If you want to, you can try.
Experimentation is fun.
It's like trying to grow lemons in Green Bay. You know, you could probably do it, but is it going to be cost effective? And it might just be easier and cheaper to buy new ones in the next year.
There you have it, Mike. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Gail in Iola, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have 2 Cortland apple trees, and last year, due to hail, I lost almost all my apples, so I was thrilled this year when I had tons of blossoms and lots of apples. However, somewhere along the line, when I was spraying, either with the deer and rabbit repellent or my fruit tree spray, every single apple that I had fell off. What did I do wrong?
You had lots of blooms this year, right?
Oh, just loaded.
Did you thin your apples?
Pardon me?
Did you thin them? Did you remove any of the blooms or the little fruit?
Nope.
Sometimes if your tree's got too heavy of a... Okay, Most trees are alternate bearing. Okay, apple trees, they have one really big year and one really small year. And so what people do to kind of even that out is they thin. On an apple tree, the flowers go in clusters, and you have one flower that's bigger that's called the king flower, and you want to keep that one and thin the other ones away. Okay. And there's some chemical ways to do this too, but it's a little bit of an art and a science all mixed together. But okay. What happens is if you have a really big bloom and a really heavy crop that sets on your tree just can't sustain all that fruit. So okay. Sometimes it just has to abort.
Okay, and the apples all turned real, you know, they were probably about a half inch in diameter, yeah, and they yeah. turned yellow yeah. and yep. shriveled up, and everybody dropped to the ground. And I thought, oh, I must have sprayed it at the wrong time. Or
no.
It's not your fault. You're just going to have to go through and thin. It'll probably be a much thinner crop next year, so you'll probably have a good shot.
And thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. On this edition of Garden Talk, speaking with Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, Director of the Education at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville, and Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha, Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Mike Maddox, UW Extension Hort Educator in Rock County, Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha, Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, here to answer your questions. Diane in Cable emailed, says she has a problem with zucchini plants. They develop fruit and then the end gets rotten by the blossoms. Any ideas for her? Well, that certainly is blossom end rot. Sound of it to me.
Well, and Mike and I were talking about this, and we think that it's one of two possibilities. Most likely is pollination. They'll set fruit, and they'll start a fruit even if they're not completely pollinated. But if they're not completely pollinated, they won't grow into a regular fruit. The other is uneven watering. So I would check, and if you feel like you're watering them appropriately, then my guess would be pollination, and you might want to try to plant some plants that might attract pollinators to use your zucchini a little bit more next year.
John in La Crescent, Minnesota. Hello to you.
Good afternoon. I have a question about... I actually have two questions. I thought about another question while I was on hold, so forgive me.
Okay.
The first question involves, I have two silver maples in my backyard, and they have, this year, I think in the spring, they started to get like a black fungus on the leaves. Mm-hmm. And discoloration, and I didn't treat them yet, but I'm trying to figure out what sort of treatment I should give them, and should I do it in the fall and then do it again next spring?
This year, I know in Rock County, and I'm assuming it was everywhere, yeah. we had a leaf spot on maple trees that wound up being called Venturia leaf spot. Don't worry about it.
It's yeah, and then you know the spring we had anthracnose, and mm-hmm. there's some other things mixed in, and it was really dark this year, and it particularly hit silver maples and Norways because
yeah, and the weather we've had, it's been cool, it's been wet, that is just leaf spot season,
yeah.
and you know we consider it cosmetic. Mm-hmm. Frankly, it's bothering you more than it's bothering the tree.
The only thing you need to make sure you do is you rake up those leaves and you get rid of them. And that will help you prevent from getting an infection again next year. But, yeah, don't worry about it. No need to spray anything.
Okay. And then my second question, real quick, if I can, is I have a Japanese Katsura tree, and it's about 5 years old. It's doing pretty well, but I've noticed it's starting to lean to the left a little bit. Now, should I try to tie that back, or do you think that will straighten out? I would say it's about 12 feet tall by now.
Is it growing towards the light, or is it the whole thing shifting?
Growing towards the light. Can you explain that?
As all the new growth is leaning away from a dark, shaded side and going towards a brighter, sunny side?
Or is it the whole stem of the tree is kind of leaning?
Oh, it's leaning toward the light, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then what you would need to do is do some corrective pruning on the things around it so it gets even distribution of light on all sides so it isn't just growing towards the sunnier side. You may also need to come in with some pruners and train the tree to grow the way you want it to grow. You just don't have your trees go untended every year. You need to come in and train them for the growth you want them to have.
Okay, very good. Thank you
very
much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I have an email from John, who is listening in Texas, as a matter of fact, listening on the internet, was wondering how well bluebonnet flowers do in Wisconsin. He's in Houston, Texas, has a friend in Eau Claire and who loves blue flowers and was looking at maybe sending her some. I'm not so sure about bluebonnets in Wisconsin.
I'm not so sure either. We have our own bluebells. I don't know. What part of me says try, but then the other part of me thinks, what's the legal ramifications of moving plant material like that?
Well, and Eau Claire is a little bit colder than it is in southern Wisconsin, so yeah. I think it would be pretty dicey.
It'd be pretty dicey. Bluebells, though, would be an alternative.
Yes.
For
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's an alternative. Let's go to Steve and Nasita next. Steve, hello.
Hello. I was wondering what the best way to plant rhubarb is. I'm going to be transplanting it. My soil is kind of sandy up there. It was a natural, about 4 inches of topsoil, and there's a spot where I excavated, and I got it down to about 1.5 feet. Would that be a good spot for that rhubarb?
They like organic, well-drained soil, so it sounds like you have a good location for it. Lots of sun.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks for calling, Steve. Andrea emailed us, lives in Vilas County, and would like to plant potatoes, onions, and garlic. Can I plant any of those this fall for next year's garden?
Yes, absolutely. Start with your garlic. Potatoes can actually be put in fairly early in the spring. At our place, we plant those around Easter. So you can put them in, let them sit in the ground, and when the ground's warm enough, the plants will shoot up. So,
but garlic
onions,
for sure.
Yeah, garlic for sure. And then onions, you have to wait a little bit later until the ground warms up.
Let's turn to Gary in Duluth, Minnesota next. Gary, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with yellow-bellied sapsuckers attacking my Mount Ash trees.
Yeah.
And they go to work on them up above, even where I've got them wrapped. So I'm kind of at a loss as what I can do to keep them away. I don't want to hurt the birds.
Well, they can do a lot of damage, as I'm sure you have found out, Gary.
And mountain ash trees tend to be prone to many problems. Where it's almost to the point where I don't even recommend planting mountain ash because they tend to be very short-lived. I know they're pretty in that, but with all the insects and disease, and in this case bird problems, if you're trying to keep the birds away, you might want to try to do some scare tactics up in the tree. Maybe some silver plates, those eyeballs that you blow up, those beach ball eyeballs you hang from the tree, so those can be put in there. Plastic snakes, I had a predatory owl.
People use CDs and string them from some fish line, and then you have them spinning, and they have a nice flashing component to them.
Pie tins, any of that kind of stuff will work. You just have to move it around on occasion. Animals can habituate to whatever kind of scare tactic you may put up there.
Yeah, so you need to change it around.
Mm-hmm.
I have a neighbor with an owl on a plastic owl sitting on his pier, and the birds just flock around it and sit there.
When it's out there 24/7 all year long, they catch on to that one really quick.
We have caller Dave in Milwaukee next. Dave, hello to you.
Good morning. How are you? Or is it good afternoon?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. thanks for hearing my question.
Sure.
I've got a bountiful tomato harvest here.
Good. Congratulations.
Unfortunately, and I do like fried green tomatoes, but I'm not getting any ripeness going on. And it's an area that, late in the afternoon is shade. During the day, good sun. But I just am seeing no movement towards even orange hardly.
When did you plant them?
Well, I was a little bit late, I think. I know I helped a friend of mine with her garden in the Twin Cities, and she was about 3 weeks ahead of me, and she's doing real well. I have had some ripen, but they're just producing fruit like mad. But
Yeah, I'm guessing that you probably have a little less sunlight than is optimal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just behind the curve. So give it a couple more weeks. Even after, you know, once we get that those first light frosts, you can just tent those with some row cover or a sheet or a blanket or something overnight,
mm-hmm.
and hold them out. And you might be able to keep tomatoes coming into October. So even though you're going to start late, you still might be able to get all those fruit to ripen.
All right, great. And then tomatillos. I've got tomatillos as well. And are those fruits supposed to fill the husk as they grow, or are they always going to be smaller than the husk?
We usually harvest them when that husk starts to crack and burst. So it's really full.
Okay.
You know, I'm not a tomatillo expert by any means, but that's when we harvest them. And when I go to the Mexican stores in the area, that seems to be what's on their shelves.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. All this talk about tomatoes reminding me about tomato jam. Do you ever have tomato jam?
Yes.
An old friend of mine, Dorothy Rodefeld, made the best tomato jam. I have one. That's one of the great memories of my younger years is eating that tomato jam.
Our herb society down in Janesville makes tomato jam, garlic jam. They make all these vegetable jams, and I always look forward to Christmas because they always have them out, and like they're just great.
Wonderful stuff. Dave in Madison. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Now, with the nurseries, basically, you know, with the orphan plants, so basically, you know, it's not the best-looking plant, what have you. So the two questions I got, and I'll hang up and listen. One, can you give me any secrets on haggling with the nursery guy about the price? And two, what on your guess, what was the best deal they ever got on their plants? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
All right. Haggling. Well, this time of the year, maybe you could do a little haggling.
I'm not a haggler. I'm not good at that. But
well, Kristen, are you?
No, I mean, you can definitely go around and take a look and try to find things that they've got to move. I mean, if they've got things in ball and burlap sitting on the pavement and they need to move them, you might want to have a discussion with them. But a lot of the nurseries put things on pretty good clearance this time of the year. Trick is to make sure you get them in the ground and you keep them watered all winter because, you know, fall plantings can be a little more susceptible to winter kill.
And keep in mind, if these plants have been sitting on the nursery lot all summer long, they may have taken some damage from heat and some water stress during that time. You can get some good deals, but you're going to have to do some extra TLC to those plants.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a gamble once you start getting the real orphan plants and the must sell now.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of those could have disease or insect problems or things like that. So there are places that aren't the most highly reputable places. So take a careful look at the tree and make sure it's in decent health before you invest any money into it.
And he asked about our best deals. I'm helping Kristen with a tree deal right now. I'm trying to get something for her yard.
It can take years to get a good deal, but when you get one, you're pretty happy with it.
And I've had some. I've been gifted some nice plants over the years. I'm going to refrain from details, but a lot of the plants in my yard have been either compost pile salvages, nursery deals that I've nursed back to health, and just some really appreciative master gardeners over the years.
I have a lot of luck with bare root. I get a lot of bare root around Earth Day when people can't, you know, they give them away as free giveaways. And if they have extras, sometimes they get some extras. So free plants are nice. I mean, they usually require a little more time and a little more attention. But most of us have more time than money these days. So
here's one from Karen in Madison. My tomato plants, not too far from a black walnut tree, grew to their full height and sprouted green tomatoes, and then all the leaves withered and died, but all of the green tomatoes continue to ripen to their full color and taste quite good. Is this common with a black walnut tree nearby, or was something else wrong with them? Well, it's certainly common with a black walnut.
Well, we could call this the late blight show today. Tomatoes had problems this year. We said that this already. The walnut tree probably played a role in the stress on your tomatoes. But I'm thinking it was probably in combination with all this weather and fungal diseases out there without looking at the plant doing a test.
No, but black walnuts, just in general, just refrain completely from tomatoes near black walnuts. It's too much of a gambling game. If you have black walnuts, go raised bed. Yeah, absolutely.
Go raised bed. Avoid getting the black walnut leaves or any of the material in your compost put around them, because they do contain that juglone that can affect their growth.
Karen also has a very robust spaghetti squash plant. Was actually taking over the lawn or taking over the area, but recently came down with a white powder on all the broad leaves, and some are now wilting. Powdery mildew?
Yes.
That's just part of the natural life cycle of all squash plants. If you're going to grow squash or pumpkins, just assume that once it starts getting cool, you know, in the fall, you're going to get powdery mildew. But the thing to know is that by this time in the year, your plants have set fruit and they're sized up, and all they're doing is getting to the point where they're ripening, so they're ready. So you really don't need the leaves anymore. So don't. People ask me all the time, what can they spray? What can they do? Just don't worry about it. It's just part of the natural senescing process of a squash plant, and it's the way it's supposed to happen. And it'll die, and then you'll still have your squash. So, yeah, just assume it's natural. Just like with Monarda, they always get white powdery things and they die. So.
All right, there you go. Cora and Algoma, your turn. Hi, Cora.
Hi. I have a little different question. 3 years ago, I transplanted what looked like a raspberry out of my daughter's yard. They had bought the house, and this was in it. She didn't know what it was, and she didn't want it, so I transplanted it. It was on a wire trellis. So the second year, it grew canes that were probably 8 to 12 feet long on it. And it didn't do anything else but just grew, and it was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this spring, I cut it back. The old canes didn't come back, and I cut it all back to the base. New canes come out. Well, now this year, it produced fruit. This was like a Arnold Schwarzenegger of raspberries. I checked with a master gardener. I gave her a description how it was growing, a leaf. She took it to somebody else, and they said it was an ornamental raspberry. The fruit wouldn't be dangerous, but it wouldn't have any taste. Well, now the fruit is developed. They're huge, dark purple fruit, and I tasted one, and it tastes like grape. It's a very good flavor. But I have a little grandson who loves berries, and I want to be absolutely sure of what this is before I start giving them to him. Any ideas?
We'd have to go to a specialist at the university to get 100% ID.
Oh, boy, I'm trying to think of, do you have a, can you, could you send a digital photo?
I can try.
If you could get a digital photo, you could send it to, who would be the best one to send it to?
Well, if you can go through your county extension office and have them relay it up to the folks.
I don't know who the new person is. They just hired somebody in that position for a fruit specialist. So that's a new position. It's just been filled recently, and I hear the woman who's filled it is really good, but I can't for the life of me remember her name off the top of my head.
That's in Kewaunee County?
No, but you could take it there, and they would forward that information on to the person in Madison, but that's really the best person. There's an extension specialist that deals with just fruit crops located at UW-Madison, and they're kind of our go-to person for all those questions that we can't answer at the county level.
But if you could get some good pictures of the fruit and the leaves.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. And then just either bring them in or email them to your county extension, and they'll be able to forward those on and probably get you an answer pretty quickly.
Okay, thank you. I hate to have this fruit go to waste because it has a wonderful flavor, and I have quite a few berries.
Oh?
But I'd like to find out for sure. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Tom in Barron County, on to you. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon. I have a question about apple trees. Last year in the spring, the Boy Scouts around here had a fundraiser. I bought a couple apple trees, and then they came out and planted them also. One of them was doing great. It overwintered. They both had leaves on last summer, and then one came back this year. The other one didn't come back, and it's about 4 feet tall, but it's got leaves on about the first half of it. The top part of the tree doesn't have any leaves on it, and there's also a couple sprouts coming up on the side of it. Is it worthwhile to try and see if that thing comes back, or am I kicking a dead horse here?
I'd let it go. yeah, I'm... Do you have any idea what kind of an apple tree it is?
It's one's a Cortland and one's a Honeycrisp. And to be honest with you, I don't remember which is which. I figure when the apples came, then I'd find out.
Honeycrisps are not an easy tree to grow, and that's part of the reason they're so expensive, is it takes them a while to get to bear, and they're a little tricky to take care of. So maybe it's the Cortland that came back. It's not going to hurt anything to let it go and see what happens.
See what happens. Because the guy, when I talked to him, the guy I bought him from, he said that a lot of times he said that they'll start producing after a couple of years, even, you know.
I think it might take you a couple extra years on this one if it does come back.
Okay, I was just kind of curious if I should just pull it out and plant a new one this fall or something, but I might as well let her go for a little while.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. Jack and Shano, hello.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a 20-plus year-old dwarf lemon tree. I plant it in the spring and summer outdoors and bring it in for the fall through the winter and then put it back out again. Every year we've had very delightful blooms with magnificent fragrance to them. This year I guess we had about a dozen blooms and did not produce any fruit. It has produced fruit in the years past, but nothing this year.
Well, wet or
repot
cold.
It?
Beg pardon?
Is it in a container in a pot?
No, it's indoors it's in the container in a pot, yeah. Outdoors I plant it outside.
Oh.
So you take it out of the pot and plant it outside?
That sounds really stressful. I would keep it in a pot all year round. And then you can move it out into the garden and back in and in the pot. But
you could probably sink the pot into the ground.
Yeah.
You could have a larger pot just buried in to your ground where you want to move it. Then when you want to take it outside, go sink it into the ground. That would help protect it.
I would check and see if it's starting to get root bound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, check for root bound, nutrients. It could have just been a fluke at the time you're moving it. You could have done something while it had those flower buds. You killed them. It could have decided to take a year off.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about it. I would check and make sure your nutrients are good and repot it in a little more organic matter, and I think it'll be just fine.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jay in Racine emailed just wondering about, this had to be a question, happened to be a question about fruit and vegetable safety and where to go for materials or information on fruit and vegetable safety for canning or otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I think, the Learning Store, the University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store, and what's it? It's learningstore.uwx.edu.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have all of our publications are available at that website for horticulture and for everything Extension does, including food preservation. If you don't have access to the internet, contact your county Extension office, talk to the family living educator. In order to get information about canning and food preservation. Keep in mind, there is a Master Food Preserver program that goes on in the state every year, and it bounces around in which location, but that could be another resource for you. And to find out if you have any Master Food Preservers in your county, that would be a good place to start.
So learningstore@uwex.edu, it's a good place to go. Or just call your county extension agent or your county extension office, and folks there are really always very happy to help out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for the sake of all our colleagues out there, if you leave a message and nobody gets back to you right away, try calling back again. We are right now being overwhelmed with phone calls, and sometimes a number doesn't get transcribed correctly, or your slip of paper has fallen off our desk. It happens. We don't mean it to. Be persistent.
Be a little persistent. And I'm glad that you guys were persistent today. You answered a lot of questions. And thank you so much. You'll come back and do this again, I hope.
Oh, we'd love to.
Yeah, loved it.
Appreciate having you here. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator and Director of Education at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha is the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. Really happy to have them along, and they'll be back. Again, we'll do this again with them next week on Garden Talk. Bruce Allison, Madison Professional Consulting Arborist, will be our guest. We'll certainly talk about trees. That's next week's Garden Talk. But Monday, resident and migrant birds, our topic on Labor Day with Noel Cutright and Bill Volkert. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.